talking to some of the best voices in Nashville. This is One-on-One with Greg Pogue.
Presented by Freeman Webb.
Also brought to you by
Strike and Spare Family Fun Centers, Bass Tire Company, Sam's Sports Place and Sports Grill, Holiday Inn Express Nashville Airport, Valentino's Ristorante, and Sir Speedy of Music City.
One-on-One with Greg Pogue. Broadcasting live from Roy's Meat Service in East Nashville. Your sports live here on 94.9 The Fan.
And the Game Nashville Sports Network.
Now, here's Greg Pogue.
Good Saturday morning. Welcome in. 101 with Greg Pogue, presented by Freeman Webb, Roy's Meat Service in East Nashville. And our guest this morning, one of the true great sports writers in our state's history, International Motorsports Hall of Famer, Tennessee Sports Writer Hall of Famer, his University Hall of Famer, Larry Woody, covered auto racing locally here, just everything. Vanderbilt, on and on and on. We're going to get into it this hour with Larry Woodrow. What's up?
Good morning, Pokester. Two old guys sitting around talking about how bad things are today and how good they used to be back when we were young.
Well, yeah, that's not how I recalled it, but
I vaguely recall it.
Yeah, right? We fought through it.
Yes, we did.
More than anything else. So what are you doing these days?
Well, I'm semi-retired. As you know, Greg, getting away from newspapers is like trying to get away from the mafia. Every time you think you're out, they pull you back in. I write for Main Street Media. Dave Gould, Dave and Ellen Gould, they got a great little deal set up. They got 18 community papers. They focus on community news, websites. I've got a website in Nashville, Main Street in Nashville, and they do a really good job, and I don't say that because they're listening.
I mean, they've got a combined circulation of over 80,000 with all their papers and everything they do. I'm a big fan of Main Street Media.
No, it's really good. Really good. And Greg, to hit on a good formula, it's a unique idea for journalism nowadays. They put stuff in the paper people want to read, and then people buy the paper or click on the websites and read it. But no, it's fun, and I do it mainly as a hobby.
Well, it's local. We can go down there. You know, there's no agenda here. My notes on this, you know, are equally the local is still where the hook is. Me growing up, if I got two hits in Little League, in the Bowling Green Little League, my name was in the paper the next day. Pictures and just faces, names and faces.
It's like politics. All news is local. People want to know what's going on in their neighborhood, and like you, what affects them. Sees how their neighborhood kids did in the football game Saturday night, that kind of thing. And as far as competing, Greg, my theory has always been that the more publicity somebody gets, it's better for the sport. Like for the Tennessee, or my buddy Mike Organ covers NASCAR racing. I cover racing for Main Street Media. And I know you do it a lot on your shows too. But I don't think we're competitors. I think we're generating interest for everybody. And like my buddy Caldwell and I did at the Banner, it was a friendly rivalry, and it benefited everybody, and particularly the readers, because we're trying to beat each other. So
it made everybody better.
Everybody better trying to play against the best, which Caldwell
it wasn't, was. You know, and me, well, with certain people, I wanted to beat the crap out of them, okay? I want to beat them but a lot of them is that it's not necessarily, I think this is where society is that I want to win. I don't want to beat you. I want to win, and I don't have to beat you to prove you're wrong or second.
And with Caldwell, we're
going to get into that.
Yeah, we art travels for 30 years, but we travel together, room together, carouse together, and we're best friends, but we try to beat each other at the battle.
Joe Caldwell, your great friend, the late Joe Caldwell, who covered racing for the Banner. Yep. You covered for the Tennessee, and you became best of friends, yet competitors. And I did hear the word carousing in there.
Well,
yeah.
We won't go into all of that. But, we were like brothers.
Yeah.
I compare it, Greg, to playing against a friend of yours in golf. You try to beat each other, and it's good-natured ribbing, and at the end of the day, you go back to the clubhouse and drink a lemonade. So that's the way it was with Caldwell.
Lemonade.
Except for the lemonade.
Yeah, it's... there's a story of Jimmy Davey, legendary Tennessean, and Edgar Allen, legendary Banner. They were the beat writers covering Vanderbilt, and I believe they were in Memphis together, rode down together. Edgar got so sick he couldn't write his story, and Jimmy Davey helped him or wrote it for him.
I think he wrote it for him.
And the Banner put it in there.
And John Bibb, our sports editor, and Edgar Allen at the Banner were the same way. They were good friends, traveled together. So, but when you read the papers, you'd think we were hated each other, arch enemies. But funny story about Davey. We were riding together to Oxford, Mississippi to cover the Vanderbilt Ole Miss game the next day. We left on Friday afternoon. We're driving the back roads. I'm driving, and as usual, Davey and I are just yakking and talking, not paying any attention to where I'm going. After a while, we're driving through this down these roads, and Davey says, Woodrow says, it seemed like we ought to turn back there. And I said, Davey, I've driven this trip, made this trip 100 times. I know where I'm going. We keep driving. We come over hill, and there's the Buford Busser Museum. And so we've missed the turnoff about 15 miles, so we turn around, go back, and I have to listen to Davey gripe and complain. So every time we'd go on a road trip after that, he'd say, Woodrow, are we going to go by the Buford Busser Museum this time? those were such fun times back then. And as you know, Greg, we lived through the golden era of sports writing.
Yeah, and it was a two-newspaper town, right?
Yep.
And you see that in so many major cities now, and some have been done completely away with the daily product. But
Atlanta Journal, they're going online, and I thought they had the best sports section not only in the South but in the country, and now it's online. But things change. I'm not sure it's changed for the better.
Well, this phone right here, an instant – you got to do it instantly, right?
Greg, I'm so old, and you are too, at the Tennessean. When I got there, like I said, in the fall of 66, people would buy the Tennessean on Saturday mornings to see who won the games.
Right.
The football games on Friday night, then they'd buy the Sunday Tennessean, which had a circulation of about 290,000. They would buy the Sunday Tennessean to see who won the college games. And now,
also to get baseball scores, standings.
They actually didn't know TV didn't do much of a job covering sports, you know. Everybody, Hope and Rudy, those guys, they'd do what they could with what they had to work with time-wise. But that's how you tell people that people would buy a newspaper to see who won the game the night before, and they, you know, they think you chiseled it on a cave wall with a
hot type. Yeah, using hot type. Larry Woody, our guest. Three-time Tennessee Sports Writer of the Year.
And you were in that company, too, Greg.
Well, thank you.
You're there.
Yep. It's a nice Hall of Fame to be in.
It is.
It really is. A good and when you talk about Fred Russell, John Bibb, and everyone, it is an honor.
Pretty awesome company.
It is. Where are you from?
Crossville. Little town up in the mountains.
Yeah.
Some people said that's the restroom stop for UT for fans on their way to UT for football games. Yeah, beautiful little town. I've still got some farmland up there and keep threatening to retire and move up there someday. But anyway, that's
tell me about growing up. Mom, dad, family. Tell me about that. I don't know if I've ever asked you that.
Dad was a glorified handyman, carpenter, who started his own construction business eventually, and we were able to move out of a little three-room tar paper shack with no running water and electricity. My mom was a grocery clerk and worked herself to death to civilize me, and was able to go to Martin Methodist College, played tennis, met my buddy Tom Thurman there. Well, Thurman and I grew up together in Crossville, and he became the deputy DA here in Nashville, most prominent prosecutor in Nashville history. So Thurman and I decided we'd go to Martin Methodist College, played tennis, he played baseball, then transferred. Martin was a two-year school, after we graduated from Martin. Transferred to Belmont. Bunny Huggins and I were tennis partners on Belmont's first
Harold
tennis
team. Huggins.
Harold Bunny Huggins. And then he went to work for the Banner, and we were rivals there covering preps together.
And then later went to the Tennessean when they had a big Black Friday day where they blew out half the staff at the Banner back then.
That was awful. So, and I was good friends with Joe Biddle, your old sports editor, the Banner sports editor. Worshipped Fred Russell, the Banner sports editor. He was our Grantland Rice, in my opinion, was ahead of Grantland Rice. And again, he's such a great guy, just wonderful. I bought all his books, and one was out of print, and he found one and brought it over and gave it to him and autographed it. Said, "Larry, this is out of print. It's the only one I could find. I'm sorry, it's such poor condition."
Was it bury me in an old press box?
It was the one before that.
It was
one of the first ones, something like I'll try anything twice, I believe.
Right.
But anyway, I got off the subject. You asked me where I grew up. Crossville.
Well, it's now a resort area, right? Oh, with the golf courses
it's one big golf course.
Yeah. But you went to Martin Methodist, Belmont, right?
And Martin Methodist 2 years.
Yeah,
then
because
Belmont.
It was a 2 year. Now it's what, University of Tennessee Southern.
Yeah, UT
right?
Southern.
And you're in that Hall of Fame.
Yep.
As well. I don't want, because we've got a break coming up here in a couple minutes. I want to talk a little bit about in-depth more of your military and thank you for your service and how much that made you as well. And also talking about the Vanderbilt days, beat writer. You were joking a minute ago, the only coach you never got along with was Eddie Vogler.
You were there.
I know. And I hated to see it.
No, you loved every minute. You egged him on.
No, I actually, Mark McGee was still the beat writer. I was just part of that whole thing.
Yeah, Mark and I, we compete, but you were there.
I was Vanderbilt beat writer right after that.
Later on, after I ran McGee off the beat.
Yeah. But in those Vanderbilt days, can you imagine where Vanderbilt is today?
It's in
all sports. You ever thought their baseball would win a national championship?
No.
They didn't even have a fence.
And my buddy Larry Schmitto still takes credit for that. He built a program.
Oh, yeah. Schmitto,
and we might get into Schmitto. A lot of people are listeners probably don't know who Larry Schmitto was. I think he's one of the most significant sports personality in Nashville history.
Well, I'm going to do that in a minute. I'm going to have you name the Mount Rushmore of Nashville sports figures historically.
Okay.
And I would agree with the first one is Larry Schmitto.
Yeah.
So, all right, we'll take a break. It is Larry Woody, 101 with Greg Pogue, presented by Freeman Webb, right here at Roy's Meat Service in East Nashville. Welcome back in, 101 with Greg Pogue, presented by Freeman Webb, Roy's Meat Service in East Nashville. Our guest is three-time Tennessee Sports Writer of the Year, multiple Hall of Famer, including the International Motorsports Hall of Fame, Larry Woody, with us. Larry, before we went to the break, we brought up Larry Schmitto, and then I said, hey, let's do a Mount Rushmore of the four most important figures in the history of Nashville sports. And Larry, obviously, is at the top of the list.
He would be the Mount Rushmore, Greg, and not just because he founded the Sounds and revived baseball. When I started at Tennessee, and there was no professional sports in Nashville except the two NASCAR races at the fairgrounds, the two NASCAR Winston Cup races every year. Schmitto, against all odds, and mortgaged his own house to pull it off, started the Sounds. The Sounds, as you know, were so successful, it got national attention. Sports Illustrated was coming in and doing stories about Larry Schmitto's minor league team, led the nation attendance, all these wacky promotions, New York Times, the national media was writing stories about Larry Schmitto's Sounds. It caught the attention of a guy named Bud Adams down in Houston who was looking for some place to move his team, and he thought, well, Nashville seems like it's kind of an interesting sports market. Now, I'm not saying that's the reason Bud brought the Titans here, the only reason. I'm saying that's what caught Bud's attention, and I know because he told me. So that got Bud's attention. Then he at least began to look and explore, and he said, sure enough, I kind of like Nashville. So Schmitto certainly played a hand, if not, well, not the factor in getting the Titans, and then it went from there. So again, that's why I would say Schmitto is the most significant sports figure in history. You'd probably have to put Fred Russell up there too.
Mm-hmm.
And like I say, he was our Grantland Rice. He was a nationally prominent sports writer, columnist, and the best in the business, again, in my opinion.
Well, he wrote for the Saturday Evening Post, the national column.
He was national.
Well, if Vanderbilt didn't hire anybody unless he approved it.
He did. Bill wrote a sports column once saying they're speculating who might be the next AD, and he said, go over to the Banner and ask Fred Russell. But, Greg, I covered the NFL for 3 years, traveled around, and I would be in the press box, and they'd have Larry Woody, Nashville, Tennessee, and everywhere I get, Chicago, L.A., New York, Miami, anywhere around the country, when other writers would be wandering around the press box and see the name tag Woody Nashville to, they come, how's Freddie doing?
Well,
how's
you Fred can imagine doing? Being with the banner.
He knew everybody. Yeah, he knew everybody.
It was a great honor in my life. He signed a really nice note to me with one of those books. And
great guy.
Yeah, his daughter Carolyn, just a sweetheart as well.
She's as sweet as can be. And, yeah, I'd put Smitho and Russell up there, and, of course, Caldwell and I'd have to be on there.
Oh, yeah, you know, we can't have five.
But, no, those two would be in a class of themselves, as we said.
Tell me about covering racing. How did that all start? Because you're now in an International Motorsports Hall of Fame.
The first one I saw, car race I saw, Greg, the first one I covered, I was part-time going to Belmont at the time. This is probably about 67 along in there. And our regular racing rider, Tom Powell, was incapacitated that night. So Bib comes in and said, Woody, go to the fairgrounds and cover the race. And I said, go where and do what? I'd never seen a race, and I'd never been to a track, and back then the races weren't on TV, so I'd never seen one. I didn't know which direction the cars ran, so Bib said, go out to the track, look up Joe Carver, who is the PR director under Bill Donahoe, and he said, Carver will help you out. He not only helped me out, he wrote my story that night. The first story had my byline on it, but Joe Carver wrote it.
Yeah.
And he took me down and introduced me to all those crazy people, Cuckoo Marlin, Fluky Buford, Fat Boy Ryman. It sounds like a puppet show.
Yeah.
Bullet Bob Ruther. And I thought, this is the most fascinating thing I've ever seen. I'd cover stick and ball stuff. Mm-hmm. And I knew a little about football, basketball, a little about baseball, which Smitho denies. But anyway, the point of the story is, it's the most fascinating thing I'd ever seen in my life. And the characters, they were like cowboys, just Wild West cowboys. And I thought, I don't mind covering this. So anyway, that's the point of the story. After I was a backup rider for while I was part-time, and then when I came back from the service, then Bib put me on the beat full-time, and it was so much fun. And I covered other stuff. I'd cover football, basketball in the winter, football fall, and then auto racing spring and summer. So I had the best of all those worlds.
The golden era, I mean, up until 1984, there was a cup. It was the Winston Cup there, but there was a cup race, and whatever the politics of the fairgrounds, we're going to get it in a minute, where it was then when they lost it and where they are now. And I know that we're both going to come down on the same side of what needs to happen out there. But it was the golden era. I mean, you had Richard Petty won out there, what, 7, 8, 10 times? Daryl Waltrip, obviously, that, and it was a thing.
Sterling Marlin,
on the wind, obviously, right.
No track in the country has produced more NASCAR winners and champions than the Fairground Speedway. It's alone.
And it needs to be left alone.
Of course it does. And not to get too political, Greg, but there's been racing there for 120 years and it's on this track for 67. So anybody who moved into that neighborhood in the last 120 years knew that they were moving next to a racetrack. So it's like my buddy Mike Organ says, he and his wife bought some property at home fairly inexpensive by the airport because it's by the airport. That's what this is. The reason that they got that property relatively inexpensive because it's next to a track. So don't complain about moving next to an airport and then when the planes start flying over. So, you know, I just don't think they've got a gripe. But I'm not sure.
Even beyond that, it's just something that we need. Well, they wanted to tear down the Ryman Auditorium.
That's what I said. Some of the anti-track people say, you got a good track in Gladeville, the National Super Speedway. Why do you need this one? Well, why do we need the Ryman Auditorium? We've also got a good music venues in other places, but we shouldn't bulldoze the Ryman, and that's part of Nashville's history, not just sports history, part of the fabric of our city is that racetrack, and it's still active, and it's got unlimited potential. You know, that could be, like Gary Baker used to say, Nashville could be Daytona without the beach.
Yeah.
And
also right now, and we need a shout out to Jackson Boone Racing. Of course, Roy's Meat Service is a huge sponsor. As a matter of fact, Jackson with the win this past Saturday night, the late model. So we need to give Jackson Boone a shout out with that. And I've got to meet them through Jeff Roy here.
Great kid. I've interviewed him, and he's just a really Just a great kid.
He's got it.
Yes, he does.
Anymore these days, there's only so many seats, right?
Jackson's got the poise, the personality, and the talent. He's got it all.
And just needs the backing.
Yep.
And so Larry Woody is our guest, 101 with Greg Pogue, presented by Freeman Webb. We are at Roy's Meat Service in East Nashville. When did you first meet Joe Caldwell?
On the Vanderbilt, yeah.
So it wasn't racing, it was the Vanderbilt beat.
Well, actually, we also covered racing, and also both of us during that early era covered OVC, Ohio Valley Conference. Mm-hmm. So we also covered.
That's where I met Joe.
OVC. On the OVC beat. So, like on the NASCAR beat, we traveled together to OVC games, roomed together. Let's see, I said.
Could you see Paul Kaharsky and me going to a game together? No, the answer's no, but go ahead.
Probably not.
No way.
I like Paul. He was there when I came, but I like him.
But that we talked about it earlier on, though. But you two, that friendship, I know it. When we lost him, you lost him. It was a tough one.
It was. My wife and I had been out with Joe and his wife the night before at a Boots Donnelly roast downtown, and said goodbye at midnight.
Boots is brother-in-law.
Yeah, Boots. Yeah, mm. Boots said I woke up one morning and realized, good Lord, Caldwell's my brother-in-law. but we said goodnight about midnight that night. About 6 in the morning, Kathy called crying and said, Joe's gone. So. Rough time.
Why was he such a... I owe him a lot. Here's why. At the Banner, he pushed the publishers, Brownlee Curry and Irby Simpkins, to start a 401k retirement plan. And we didn't have anything.
Yeah.
And I fed into it, did everything. We didn't have a retirement plan. And because of him, I built retirement money.
I knew that.
And if it wasn't for him, a lot of people wouldn't have had that retirement fund.
Yeah. And he was a great writer. He kept the pressure on Greg, not just NASCAR, but OVC. He was really good. So it was constant pressure competing against, like I used to say, it's like waking, like you're a race driver, you wake up every morning and you've got to race against Richard Petty that day. That was what it was like competing against Caldwell at the Banner.
What do you do? You're still doing the racing writing for. Where can people read it? What you're writing? What are you writing right now?
Well, outdoors and racing.
Okay.
And concentrate on local people. You're talking about Jackson Boone, local, and the kids from Gladeville, Lebanon, that area, and all the websites. For example, WilsonPost.com. People can read it on Wilson.
So the Wilson Post didn't fall apart when Tommy Bryan retired.
It was a big setback, but we survived. We barely survived.
There's another. He's on the Mount Rushmore of Wilson County. Tommy Bryan.
They named the press box after him, so that's pretty high. It's fun. And all the websites, Greg, all the papers have websites also, like the Murfreesboro Post.
Well, I don't know, Columbia, and then on Maurice, Maurice Patton, has a daily talk show as well.
Main Street Media.
Main Street Media.
Yeah, their tentacles are everywhere.
Yep.
But anyway, you can find the papers in the communities, or you can access it on the website.
Larry Woody is our guest. More with Larry. This is 101 with Greg Pogue, presented by Freeman Webb, right here. Roy's Meat Service, East Nashville on 94.9 The Fan. Welcome back in, 101 with Greg Pogue, presented by Freeman Webb, Roy's Meat Service in East Nashville. Our guest, 3-time Sports Writer of the Year in Tennessee, Larry Woody, a member of the International Motorsports Hall of Fame, the Tennessee Sports Writer Association Hall of Fame, and the University of Tennessee Southern Hall of Fame, back in the day known as Martin Methodist.
It will always be Martin Methodist College.
Yeah. You've written 6 books, right?
Yep.
All right.
Six and a half. I collaborated on one.
The first one being Dixie Farewell, The Life and Death of Chucky Mullins, of course. Chris Gaines here and that.
Yeah, Brad.
I mean, Brad Gaines and everything that's, the life and death of Chucky Mullins.
Yeah,
tell me about writing that.
Touching story. I was there that day, of course, the Vanderbilt beat writer. And when Chucky tackled Brad was, played for Vanderbilt. John Gromos, the quarterback, dropped back, threw a simple little pass over the middle. Brad caught it, and Chucky was a defensive back for Ole Miss, tackled Brad, knocked the ball loose, hit him so hard, but he broke his neck, and he was paralyzed from the neck down and lived 18 months and died. So it was really, really tough. And it was such a big story because the entire state of Mississippi and the University of Mississippi and the entire state rallied behind that kid, behind Chucky. Poor kid, grew up, raised by his grandma. Billy Brewer gave him a scholarship to help him out just because Billy Brewer had grown up, the coach had grown up tough like that. And I think Billy saw a lot of himself in Chucky, just a tough luck country boy who finally got a break and got a scholarship. And then it ended. You know, somebody said Chucky was determined to be a success or die trying, and he died trying. But it was so tough, and everybody from George, President Bush, to Michael Jordan, to everybody in the country rallied behind that kid.
Well, how Brad Gaines processed it then, it was a clean hit. It was a hard hit.
Oh, yeah,
he was just going across the middle. It was a clean hit.
Yeah, Chucky hit him.
Yeah,
all Brad did was turn to catch the ball, and Chucky tackled him from behind. But still, it's like being involved in a fatal accident. Brad still felt remorse about having been involved, and he still does. He still visits Chucky's grave, and we went
every Christmas morning. He's at his grave.
And on the anniversary.
Yeah.
And we
went
together to the grave down in Russellville, Alabama to visit when we're working on the book, visit Billy Brewer and the grandma and all that, doing those stories. And Brad and I went to the cemetery, just him and me, no cameras, nobody, no, just him and me, and he broke down. So that, I mean, it was genuine. That emotion was genuine. And he's still not over it. Of course, his daughter Riley, she's doing well. She's going to be a network commentator at some point.
Yeah, she was sort of a whirlwind of some politics we won't get into now.
For better, whatever your politics are.
She was a swimmer at the University of Kentucky who lost national titles to a transgender person.
Yeah.
And But
she's talented.
Yes.
She's smart and talented, and you know, have to give her credit, regardless of whether you agree with her politics or not. But anyway, that's Brad's daughter, and I think Brad's running for politics. Speaking of politics,
he is.
I believe he's getting.
Yeah, well, good for Brad. And I threw out Chris and Greg, Gaines. You know,
Of course, they're his brothers.
Chris
and Greg, as you know.
And then Mike Organ's right in the mix there too.
He's practically one of the brothers.
Yeah. Sterling Marlin, you've written some Sterling Marlin books. Tell me about Sterling and what prompted you to write the books and just the thought of his career. Two-time Daytona winner.
Of course, I was covering NASCAR back then when Sterling was just a kid tagging around after Cuckoo, his dad Cuckoo Marlin. Somebody asked Bib what Cuckoo's middle name was. He said Coo. The background, listeners who might not know, when Cuckoo Marlin was a little boy, he couldn't pronounce Cuckoo. They'd ask him what his name is. It's Clifton. So the best he could do was Cuckoo, so it stuck with him.
Yeah.
And somebody said after they saw him drive, Greg, that was a very appropriate name, Cuckoo. But anyway, the point is, again, Sterling tagged around after his dad and always wanted to be a race driver. He said he wanted to do two things. He wanted to play football for Bear Bryant and drive a race car for Junior Johnson. And he made one of them.
Yep.
He didn't get to play football for Bear, but he got to drive a car for Junior. And I was always impressed by Sterling. He was a country boy, self-professed country boy, grew up on the farm, chopping tobacco and working on the farm. And he really worked on the farm. He wasn't just some pretty boy farm boy.
Still has one now, doesn't he?
Yeah, works on the farm. Mm-hmm. Called for him one day, and he's out bush hogging. But anyway, he was just such a good, just a down-home person. And I remember when he won his first of two Daytona 500s, all the national media, they had a Sterling Marlin Day, and all the national media went to Columbia. New York Times was there. Everybody from the nation was there for Sterling Marlin Day. And they had his flag number 4 up on the courthouse, all the town square. People lined up on the roadsides holding up, way to go, Sterling, attaboy, Sterling, go number 4. And one of the national writers went over and was interviewing Paula, Sterling's wife, and he said, "What do you think about all this, Paula?" And she said, "It's the biggest thing since Mule Day." So you had to understand.
Mule Day's a thing.
It was the biggest thing since Mule Day. But no, it's just such a captivating story, Greg, to see somebody that started so low at the bottom, a farm boy working on the farm, and becomes a national hero. He and Troy Aikman were best friends. When Aikman was at the height of his popularity, Aikman went to Sterling had gone to the Super Bowl as Troy's guest, then Sterling invited Troy to go to the Daytona 500 as his guest. Aikman was there that day, and he decided to leave early to beat the traffic out, so he's on his way to the airport when Sterling wins the race at Daytona. So Aikman turns around to try to go back and beat Sterling in Victory Circle, but the crowd's too big.
Yeah.
So Troy was there, but didn't get to see him in Victory Circle. Anyway, back to the point. It was just such a good story. And
101 with Greg Pogue, presented by Freeman Webb, Roy's Meat Service, East Nashville. Larry Woody is our guest. A collection of stories from the fast and furious world of NASCAR, Along for the Ride, the name of it. Just a compilation of your stories?
Yeah, just funny things, interesting things over the years, like Bullet Bob Ruther, who Nashville guy. He's Nashville's first big-time sports celebrity sports person. And back in the old days, he and one of his buddies drove to Daytona for the old beach race, and they drove their car. Back then, you race what you drove to the track. Bullet Bob wrecked his car, and they had to take a bus home because Bullet Bob had wrecked the race car. Funny stories like that, just interesting stories.
And Mark Martin, Mark of Excellence.
Yeah, that was a book that was a written on request book with the publisher. The Sterling books had done so well, and the Along for the Ride, that the publisher out of Chicago wanted to do another racing book. It's basically the Mark Martin's basically a coffee table book with a lot of pretty pictures and some writing in between it. But I'd always admired Mark Martin too. He was from Batesville, Arkansas, and again, he said he used to race against green-toothed pulpwood cutters, but again, that is just kind of an inspiring story for some kid to come from where he did and rise as high as he did.
And in Along for the Ride, you wrote about your, lack of a better word, exchange with Tony Stewart.
Yeah, and that was kind of blown up. I'm on the Wikipedia for some reason.
Under Wikipedia, there's a whole section under Larry Woody. I'm looking at it. It says, and it's labeled Tony Stewart Controversy.
Yeah, that lasted about 2 minutes, and it's followed me the rest of our life. We were in a press box at Bristol covering a race. You might have been there that night, Greg. But anyway, Jeff Gordon won the race, and before the race, Tony Stewart won the race, but the race before, he and Jeff Gordon had been beating and banging, and this night after they beat and banging, but this time Tony won the race. And so he came up to the press box, and any questions for Tony Stewart? And I said, yeah, Tony, what on those final laps when you're beating and banging with Jeff Gordon, what was last year's encounter? NASCAR put Tony Stewart on probation after. Mm-hmm. So I said, was any of that on your mind? And he said, you must be a local. I said, we've had a few more races since then. And I said, well, Tony, you're too young to remember. All racing used to be local. And so it kind of went downhill from there. And finally, the PR woman, Danielle, came over and took the
microphone. Danielle Humphreys.
Humphreys came over and took the microphone away from us while we're sitting there arguing. But that lasted 2 or 3 minutes. The rest of the story is, Greg, Tony came into Nashville for some kind of celebrity golf tournament, Diamond Rio. It was his favorite group. They invited Tony in that summer, and I went out and we sat around in his trailer and talked for an hour. It just like old Army. And ever since then, at Daytona, after he won at Daytona, he mentioned something about, as Larry Woody with the Tennessean once said. And so we were good friends. I mean, not just like I say, he'd come over and say, hey, Woody, how you doing? How's everything in Nashville? Blah, blah, blah. But that 2 or 3 minute exchange in the press box, it's followed me the rest of my, I guess will follow me on my tombstone. Here lies Larry Woody, once got in an argument with Tony Stewart.
He told Tony all racing was once local. But Tony came through the local. I mean, he would race anywhere, right?
Yeah. I said, Tony, you're too young to remember. There was a time when all coverage was local. But anyway, that's the story behind the Tony Stewart snit.
Yeah, who did you like covering, though, on a national basis, that maybe you didn't get to be friends with them or not, but you really enjoyed what they were about?
Of course, Richard Petty. Everybody likes Richard, and we became pretty good friends. Earnhardt, I really liked Earnhardt and admired him, and we were good friends. I was with him all the way from the first race he won as a rookie till I was at Daytona when he got killed. But probably, though, Darryl Waltrip because he's local, first of all. He's such a good story, such a good man. Darryl's a good person, you know, has a, for all his life, 50 years, has had a you know, a prayer breakfast at his home in Franklin. He's just a generally good person, but he was such good copy back in those days. If you needed a story, call Waltrip and say, hey, Darryl, what's going on? And 20 minutes later, you'd have three columns. Like Darryl said, if it's not bragging if you can do it, and he did it. He, you know, fourth all-time wins, three championships, and so he was not only a great driver, he was a good person and such a good local angle, too.
Yeah, product of the fairgrounds.
Again, he's one of those fairgrounds graduates that went on to, mm-hmm. to become one of the greatest drivers in history. And so there were several up there, and Sterling, of course, just the local guy, Bobby yeah. Hamilton. I was always a fan of Bobby Hamilton, another one of those kind of bootstrap stories that from lived on the street at one time, and then just really, really tough. I always like stories like that.
Larry Woody is our guest, 101 with Greg Pogue. More with Larry coming up right here on 94.9 The Fan. Mm-hmm. Welcome back in, 101 with Greg Pogue, presented by Freeman Webb, right here from Roy's Meat Service in East Nashville, 94.9 The Fan. Larry Woody, International Motorsports Hall of Famer, Tennessee Sports Writers Association, Martin Methodist, now University of Tennessee Southern Hall of Famer, three-time Tennessee Sports Writer of the Year. Tell me, you were at Martin Methodist, were you, and you served our country. Tell me about how that all played out.
Well, of course, Martin Methodist, two-year school then.
Right.
And after I graduated, met my wife there, Mary Frances, changed my life, kept me out of prison. And and then we transferred to Belmont together, and like I said, played tennis at Belmont with Huggins. After I graduated from Belmont, and I was working at Tennessean part-time, Raymond Johnson. I'm the last of Raymond Johnson's hirees. So, but after I graduated from Belmont, I was drafted. And for some reason, the Army thought an English lit major would make a good combat rifleman. So I ended up in the rice paddies for a year. And it wasn't as much fun as I thought it was. I volunteered for the infantry after I got over there. Vietnam was going to be the biggest event of our generation. So if I was going to have to spend a year, two years in the Army, I thought I would go ahead and see what it's all about. So I volunteered for Vietnam in the infantry, which is stupid, and I only regretted about 365 days. But I survived it and lost a lot of good friends and almost lost myself a few times. But I'm glad I went now. You know, looking back, it was a good an experience that I benefited from. I realized that once you get out of there, the rest of your life is gravy. It's downhill from there. So I don't regret it. But I tell people, Greg, I'd hate to go back tomorrow.
You just said losing of friends. Yeah. How do you process that at the moment and then after that?
I hadn't, that's 60 years ago, and I hadn't processed it yet. A good friend of mine, who became good friends there, was Fred Hassler from Crossville. He was in high school with my sister 2 years behind me. We ended up in the same company, and of course, being from the same small town, we became good friends. So Fred and I, we ate Christmas lunch together one day in a little village out in the boondocks. They flew in Christmas dinner, you know, turkey dressing and all that stuff. So Fred and I sat on a little stone cistern, out in the edge of a village and ate Christmas dinner that day and talked about what all we'd do when we got back to Crossville. 5 days later, walks into an ambush and is killed. So, you know, you just don't get over things like that. There's a bridge named after him now in Crossville, the Sergeant Frederick Hassler Bridge, and a friend of mine became good friends. He just got back from R&R in Hawaii, Sergeant Dunn, and he's showing our squad all the pictures. And I was going to meet Mary Frances in a couple of weeks. He's telling us a good place to go, things to do. He got killed 2 days later, and I helped carry him out. Another guy and I carried Sergeant Dunn out, but. You know, things like that, you don't process them. You don't get over them. I think about them every day. Something will come up, and I'll think about those guys. But again, it was an experience, and I'm glad I went through it, experienced it. But I wouldn't want to go back. We'll put it like that.
You covered a Muhammad Ali heavyweight fight.
I did.
Some of your writings have reflected your opinion of his decision not to go to the military.
Yeah. And I resented it. I'll admit it. I don't begrudge people who didn't go. I respect their decision. I couldn't have done it, but I could have probably got out if I'd wanted to. We know people who went to divinity school and that kind of stuff. I couldn't do it. But I respect their decision. But with Ali, he would have never had to picked up a loaded rifle. He could have gone to USO stores, tours and gone to hospitals and visited wounded soldiers.
Elvis Presley.
Like Elvis did. He could have done a whole lot to support the country without ever having to pick up a loaded weapon. Having said that, Ali's probably the greatest athlete I ever covered in the championship fight in New Orleans when he fought Spinks. That's the most electrifying sports moment I've ever known. You know, Kentucky Derby, Super Bowls, all that stuff. There's nothing like a heavyweight fight. And I was ringside, Greg, when they were fighting and looking up into the lights when they would hit each other, Spinks and Ali, there would be a spray of sweat and blood, a pink spray up in the lights, and it would drizzle down on us at ringside. And I looked down in my notebook like yours, and there were specks of blood splattered on the notebook. And I don't see how those people survived it. And it's not, the sad thing is not that a lot of bright boxers are brain dead. Mm-hmm. The amazing thing is that all of them are. I don't see how they. But then years later, I interviewed Ali at Vanderbilt. He came in to some kind of humanitarian tour, and his wife was there, and I went out to interview him, and he couldn't walk across the room. One of his last wife was with him, and she had to hold his arm and help him walk across the room. And here's maybe the greatest athlete in history, and he can't walk, he can't talk, he just mumbled. I never could understand what he said. So, sad ending. Yep. Mickey Mantle was the same way. Mickey was my hero growing up, and I interviewed him once, and I wish I hadn't. Not all stories have happy endings, I guess, is what we're saying.
101 with Greg Pogue, Larry Woody, the guest. All right, where's the best place to go fishing? Where are we going fishing today?
Well,
Percy
Priest used to be, but my buddy Bob Sherwood and I, we went three times this year and caught five crappie. So I'm not sure, Greg, I'm the right one to offer fishing advice. It's the worst year I've ever had.
How often do you go fishing?
We used to go maybe two or three times a week, but yeah. This year the weather was bad, the fishing was bad. it was just a bad year all around.
Is that fishing just something you did growing? Is that your hobby? You got any other hobbies right now?
I enjoy tennis, everything, like kids growing up, basketball, a little football. But tennis and growing up on the mountain, Greg, my ancestors hunted fish, not for sport. They hunted to eat. Mm-hmm. My grandmother loved squirrel brains, and I wrote a column kind of about eating squirrel brains, and I got an email from a woman in Australia who did an NPR-type program and wanted to interview me about eating squirrel brains, and she said, why did they eat them? I said, because they were hungry.
Yeah. So, well, I've actually eaten squirrel brains and scrambled eggs mixed together.
Yeah, of course. It's
I don't think I would now.
It's a delicacy.
This meat here at Roy's Meat Service, that's a delicacy.
You mean Roy's
doesn't have squirrel brains over here? No.
But anyway, I wandered off as the trail, as we always do. They hunted and fished for food back then. They ate what they killed, and I sort of grew up like that. Now, my dad didn't hunt or fish, but my uncles did, and so I'd tag around with them and got no pun intended, hooked on it, and have been ever since, and I enjoy it. But I don't do as much as I did. I can't climb in and out of the boat like I did, like I used to.
And some of the people that are around here that had, like, Bill Hall, Channel 4, remember Bill J., Woods and Waters.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
There's no Bill Dance, for example.
Jimmy Holt,
yeah. Obviously, the Tennessee outdoorsman. There's really nothing that one person that sort of is the bell cow of all that.
No, not anymore. The fishing shows and programs are kind of like newspaper print papers. They're fading out. But Bill, I thought the world of Bill Hall. I did a feature on him. He's a Vietnam veteran. Bill Hall, a Vietnam veteran.
Of course, Channel 4 weatherman.
Yeah, and Gardner and all that, and had this fishing show. And then Jimmy Holt, of course, I worked with Holt for 40 years at Tennessee, and he was a character. Bob Stieber was the outdoor editor at the Tennessee, and he was internationally known outdoor editor. And that's really how I got actually got my job because of Stieber. They needed to back up outdoor column. Stieber's under the weather one summer, and I wrote Raymond Johnson. He said, well, Stieber's coming back, but we need some part-time help. I told him I was going to Belmont, and he said, when you get your classes scheduled, come to the Tennessee, and I'll see what Mike could put you to work. So I went in to meet Mr. Johnson. He said, can you type? I said, yes, sir. And he said, be in here at 4 o'clock Friday. That was my interview. Can you type?
When you left, Mike Organ sort of, like everything he does over there, utility infielder, right, can play everywhere.
Yeah.
You would still get all of these fishing lures in the mail,
yeah.
And he would actually give them to me to give to a friend of mine who was a fishery. I don't know what to do with these.
Organ, he was even the outdoor editor,
right?
And he'd never been outdoors. he wouldn't know a trout from a muskrat. But a great guy, and he was so good. Organ's so good. He would interview people, mm-hmm. Who did outdoorsmen, duck hunters.
Right.
He did a good job doing it, even though he wasn't an outdoorsman himself. And he said, well, I covered boxing, too, but I've never boxed.
Yeah. When you look back at your career, pride sometimes is not an adjective that people don't like to throw around, but what are you the most proud of?
Well, it was so much fun. And there were some human. So, as you know, sports is such a. It's a microcosm of life. You got winners and losers. You got highs and lows, good times, bad times, and it's
a reality show.
A reality show that's real.
Yeah.
And there's so many stories, Greg. Sad stories like Mickey Mantle and Ali, and even some friends I've lost, Chuckie Mullins, stories like that, Earnhardt. And then there's also stories of triumph, like Sterling's Daytona wins and Waltrip, and poor country boys becoming international celebrities and millionaires. Just kind of the triumph of the human spirit, not to get too deep in the weeds. But there's so many. I don't know that there's one that really stands out. It's just kind of a collection of them. You could look back and so many highs and so many lows. And like they say, Greg, in sports, the highs of winning never match the lows of losing. And that's kind of like me. I tend sometimes maybe too much to dwell on the bad moments, but there are a whole lot of good moments. And
and thank you for the professionalism, friendship that you showed me. I appreciate it.
Well, people like you, Greg, it's a and I know it's trite. It's not the sport. I can barely remember who I covered 20 Super Bowls. I don't remember any of them, but I remember the people that I knew. And racing, I can't remember who won Daytona, but it's the people, and you're one of them. Yeah, that's like I told your producer, I'd only get up this early for two things: turkey hunting and Greg Pope. So it's the people. It's the friendships and the people. And it's just been a fun ride.
Thanks for doing this, Larry.
I enjoyed it.
It's going to wrap it up from Roy's Meat Service in East Nashville. Larry Woody, our guest. Have a great rest of your weekend, and keep it on 94.9 The Fan.